A class by His Holiness Devamrita Swami on Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 5th Chapter, text number 39, given on the 8th of March 2015 in Auckland, New Zealand.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 5, Narada's instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam, text 39. Imam Sanigamam Brahman Adhikya Marunushtitam Ajane Gyanamaishvayam Swasmin Bhava Chakeshava. Translation. O Brahmana, thus by the Supreme Lord Krishna, I was endowed first with transcendental knowledge of the Lord as inculcated in the confidential parts of the Vedas, then with the spiritual opulences, and then with his intimate, loving service. Purport. Communion with the Lord by transmission of the transcendental sound is not different from the whole spirit of Lord Sri Krishna. It is a completely perfect method for approaching the Lord. By such pure contact with the Lord, without offense of material conceptions, numbering 10, the devotee can rise above the material plane to understand the inner meaning of Vedic literatures, including the Lord's existence in the transcendental realm. The Lord reveals his identity gradually to one who has unflinching faith, both in the spiritual master and in the Lord. After this, the devotee is endowed with mystic opulences, which are 8 in number. And above all, the devotee is accepted in the confidential entourage of the Lord and is entrusted the specific service of the Lord through the agency of the spiritual master. A pure devotee is more interested in serving the Lord than in showing an exhibition of the mystic powers dormant in him. Sri Narada has explained all these from his personal experience, and one can attain all the facilities which Sri Narada obtained by perfecting the chanting process of the sound representation of the Lord. There is no bar for chanting this transcendental sound by anyone, provided it is received through Narada's representative, coming down by the chain of descent succession, or the parampara system. Om Yantimarandasya Jnananjana Shabhaya Chakshumvalitanina Tasmai Sri Guruve Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Vedanta Srivastava Govinda Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Narada Muni and Vyasadeva are in the midst of their extraordinarily consequential dialogue. You remember how it all began. Vyasadeva himself noted that he had some issues or problems. Now, this is very mysterious in one way, because Vyasadeva is a plenary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how is it that he can be feeling less than Om Purna? How is it that he can be feeling less than complete, or to speak of dissatisfied? Well, that is a major question. He noted that in himself even before he encountered Narada Muni. So it's not that Vyasadeva didn't have a clue what was going on, but upon his meeting Narada Muni, everything became elucidated, clearly and distinctly. So what about this apparent bewilderment of Vyasadeva, literary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Swayam Bhagavan, Govinda Hari Purusham Dhammam Ajami. The original Supreme Personality of Godhead not only can put his parts and parcels into bewilderment, but also his own plenary expansions. So it is not impossible for his plenary incarnation yesterday to be put into bewilderment for the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam being spoken. Even Balaram himself was put into bewilderment in the Brahma-Vimodana Lila. For 1 year, the residents of Vrindavan, including Balaram, didn't notice what Krishna had done by replacing all the calves and cowherd boys with his own plenary expansions, so that every mother in Vrindavan and every cow had a chance to have Krishna as their son. Because the ladies in Vrindavan were always thinking, if Krishna were my son, I'd love him just like Mother Yashoda. So to give them a chance, among many other reasons that Krishna had for the Brahma-Vimodana Lila, he became their son. So what was going on in Vrindavan was that the mothers were having affection for their sons, just like they had for Krishna. And the cows were having affection for their calves that were Krishna, even though the cows had little baby calves, which obviously should normally receive the affection and milk from the cows. Because the older calves, by that time they were older, and because the boys, the sons of the cowherd ladies were actually Krishna, the whole of Vrindavan was head over heels, so to speak, over the top, over the cliff, in attraction for Krishna. But Balaram didn't notice this. One day, although Krishna always goes to the forest with Balaram, except when it's Balaram's birthday, he's kept back. One day, especially, Krishna wanted Balaram to go to the forest with him, because Krishna was thinking, unless I reveal everything that's going on to Balaram, my enjoyment cannot be complete. Krishna's enjoyment is always complete, but then again, because everything in the spiritual world is increasing, Krishna's enjoyment becomes more and more complete at every moment. Just like, for example, Krishna combines with Srimati Radharani to form Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in order to understand the unlimited depths of Srimati Radharani's love and what it is she's tasting in love when she loves Krishna, what is it that she's experiencing, what's her position like. So it's not that Krishna is incomplete, but the spiritual platform is unlimitedly dynamic. This is something we cannot understand through our material experience. Everything material deteriorates in time. Becomes run down. That's what frustrates us. One of the things that frustrates us about so-called material enjoyment. It deteriorates, it goes downhill. Behavioral economists, especially those, they call this adaptation. That no matter what kind of material happiness you get, sooner or later you become used to it. used to it and it's no big thing. There have been, for example, psychological research done upon big time lottery winners who win hundreds of millions of dollars in the States. The state lotteries sometimes go up to over 200 million. I don't know what this is. I don't know the max of these, don't you? $38 million, so about 20 million US, small stuff. So, person that won over $200 million, yet behavioral economists have noticed that after 1 year, their level of happiness is the same as everyone else. In fact, many of them become more miserable. They commit suicide. They become depressed. They become drug addicts because they can't tell who their real friends are. They can't tell who's after them for friendship and who's after them for their money. So they just, it becomes too much for them to handle. That is the nature of so-called material happiness in terms of its dynamics. Adaptation ruins everything. The ride on the hedonic treadmill, the treadmill of material gratification, another term for behavioral economists, hedonic treadmill. They recognize all these things, but they can't do anything about it. They know about adaptation. They know about the hedonic treadmill, that you just keep on and on the treadmill, pursuing greater and greater happiness, and you never get it. Because you're projecting in your mind that if I just keep going, I'll get such and such an experience. But your mind always overshoots, it always overestimates. This is called the impact bias. You can't properly calculate the impact of the happiness you think you're going to get in the future. So, as I often explain in doing outside engagements, these scholars know all these things. They've got fancy terms for everything. But they themselves admit they can't help from falling victim to all these things. That's the nature of the dynamics of so-called material happiness. You're trapped. You're entangled. You're enchanted. And you can't stop. You're just dragged on and on and on. Then again, in Vrindavan, amongst Krishna's associates, they can't stop loving Krishna. It goes on and on and on, increasing and increasing. So much so, you see, that when there's some apparent disaster or catastrophe in Vrindavan, Kamsa has sent some demons. The residents of Vrindavan never think of their own distress and how to save themselves. They're always thinking about Krishna's pleasure. So they actually don't even notice the distress. They simply use every opportunity how to give pleasure to Krishna. Even when it seems like they're calling out to Krishna in distress, they're actually calling out to Krishna to give him pleasure. Because they know Krishna loves them, and he loves to make arrangements for them. These are the dynamics of the spiritual world. We're fearful that if we abandon the dynamics of the material world, we'll be left with nothing. This is our contamination of impersonalism and voidism. We're afraid to trust Krishna, but we're accustomed to trusting the illusory energy, even though it crushes us time after time, lifetime after lifetime. We have this sense of familiarity with Maya, and the hope that it won't be so bad. We have this hope that the illusory energy will give us some reprieve, some holiday, some vacation. It's like in the working world. You think about working day in, day out, year round. But then there's that vacation, 3 or 4 weeks. so you have your vacation or holiday hopes. Similarly, the whole enjoyment is like that. Yes, you accept that you're going to struggle, but you have those hopes for the holidays. And then when the holidays are over, you trudge back to your routine with a hope for another holiday. So this way your life becomes wasted. But these are the dynamics of illusionary. This Queen Kunti, right? Bhaveshman Pishamana Vijatama Vidhi. Out of ignorance, out of nescience, a vidya, which is a potency of Krishna, you're driven onward to struggle unnecessarily. And you're so bewildered, you think it's progress. It takes a while for us to catch this point. How all the so-called technological innovation and advancement is disguising the reality that people are becoming more and more degraded. It's so convenient to have a smartphone and a tablet and fiber optics, broadband. The internet gets quicker and quicker. How convenient it is. You can't even remember what life was like before there were mobile phones. I remember New Zealand in the mid-90s. We don't have a mobile phone. You wonder how you could have made it back then. The landline was everything. So you think, oh, how convenient things have become. At any moment, any time, you can contact someone, either through a text message or calling them. And calls on the mobile phone used to be so expensive. Now they're either free or very cheap. How great is this? Meanwhile, social psychologists point out that with all this communication technology, people are simply more lonely than ever before. Because they don't know how to build relationships. What they consider relationships is simply dealing through social network sites, Facebook and all that, Twitter, which gives them an artificial sense of togetherness, an artificial sense that they're experiencing the dynamics of relationships. And anyway, with all the high-speed communications, simply there's more contact with pornography than ever before. We even see with our own devotees. They're troubled by this. Back in the 50s and 60s, let's speak of 50s, 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, every teenage, not every teenage, but so many teenage boys, what was their prized possession? They were called skin mags. Magazines which full of revealing photos. The teenage boys just abhorred them, betrayed them. Now things are so much more advanced. That's all finished. The internet has blessed everyone with immediate access to the internet demons, I call it. So on the one hand, you think things are more convenient, things are more progressive and advanced. On the other hand, the qualities of the people are becoming more and more degraded. So it takes some concentrated focus on Srimad Bhagavatam to be able to catch all this. What does Sukadeva Goswami say in the 12th canto of Bhagavatam? Kalina Palina Raja Nakshatgaya Palam Smriti. Nakshatgaya Palam Smriti. Due to the force of time, with each passing day, the good qualities of human beings deteriorate in the age of color. Time has force, it has pressure. Those are the dynamics of the material world. Yet Krishna says that's his inferior potency. What's going on with the internal potency? The internal potency has its own dynamics, in which those fully under the attracted to Krishna. So Krishna wanted Balaram, especially on that day, to come to the forest. Because Krishna wanted Balaram to catch on to what was happening. Isn't that why Krishna's pleasure would be more expensive? So the pivotal scene happened, as you know, when the older cowherd men with the cows were on top of Govardhan Hill. And everything was going on properly in terms of cowherding. But somehow or other, the young cowherd boys made what appears to be a mistake. Of course, there's no mistake in Krishna Leela. They wandered nearby. They were down at the foot of the hill. This is all going on near Radhakund. They were at the foot of the hill with the calves. They shouldn't have done that, actually. They shouldn't have brought the calves in eyesight of their mother cows, because then the mother cows want to feed them. And these older calves, they were no longer the babies. But they were Krishna. But no one knew this. So the cows see their older calves at the bottom of the hill, and the cows start racing down the hill. Very graphic description, you remember, in Bhagavatam and in Krishna book. The cows were running down the hill as if the two front feet were joined together and the two back feet were joined together. Their heads were high in the air, the tails were high in the air, the humps were moving as they raced down the hill, pouring milk from their lip bags and tears from their eyes. And they got to their older calves at the bottom of the hill, which were all Krishna, and began giving those older calves all the milk. As they licked the bodies of these older calves, as if they were just swallowing them. How did the cowherd men feel, the gopas? They were a bit angry. Wait a minute. Our cowering activities have been spoiled. We haven't properly executed our duties because the older calves are not supposed to drink all the milk. So the cowherd men came down from the top of the hill. And they were a little angry. Especially they were thinking, why have these young cowherd boys brought these older calves in the eyesight of their mothers? That's a cowherd mistake. They were thinking like that at first and trying to get angry, but then they saw the beauty of these cowherd boys, which are actually all Krishna. And they picked them up on their laps, embraced them, smelled their heads, forgot all about what had happened. And even when they finally put down these cowherd boys, who were all Krishna, as they were walking away to go back to the older cows, the cowherd men were stunned with absorption in thinking of these cowherd boys who were all actually Krishna. So Balaram is watching, and for the first time, Balaram starts to wonder what's happening here. The Acharyas point out that Balaram's unbewilderment happened in four phases. You want to meditate on the engineering technology of the diminishment of Balaram's bewilderment. Phase number one. Why is it that these older calves are getting milk from their mother, even though these cows, the mother cows, have young babies? What's going on? And why are all the mothers in Vrindavan loving their sons just like they would love Krishna? What's happening here? So then Balaram began to consider the situation. Analyze. What could be possible reason? Maybe these older calves, as well as these cowherd boys, are demigods or great sages who are trying to grab a spot in Krishna Lila. Well, I don't think so. Not really possible for that to happen. Or maybe there's some kind of witchcraft, some sorcery going on. Maybe it's the plan of Kamsa to cause some trouble. If Kamsa can get the parents in Vrindavan to treat their boys like they were Krishna, then the parents, it seems, would neglect the real Krishna. And that would disturb everything. Maybe that's Kamsa's plan. After all, Kuchina came and she bewildered the residents of Vrindavan. So maybe there's some Rakshasi Maya coming up, going on here. Maybe some demoness has cast a spell causing havoc. Otherwise, what's going on? The older calves getting the milk instead of the baby calves. The mothers loving their sons just like they love Krishna. What's happening here? Next, it's time for phase two of Balaram's unbewilderment. They can't be demigods, because they can't butt their way into Krishna Lila. It can't be a demoness, Rakshasi, causing havoc. Because how could a Rakshasi bewilder me? I'm Balaram. So that possibility is ruled out, that it could be a demoness with material proofs. After all, I know who I am. This must be some kind of potency coming from my brother. Then Balaram began to consider deeper. Actually, it's not exactly a potency of my brother. It's not exactly yoga maya. It's my brother's aishwarya, his opulences, that are causing this to happen. So, in this way, Balaram's unbewilderment went through these phases. He began then to understand that each of the older calves and each of the cowherd boys was actually Krishna. And he then started to inquire from Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami says he briefly asked some questions. He asked Krishna, can you just briefly explain this? In other words, I don't want to exhaust you. I don't want that you go through a lengthy explanation. Just give me a few tips, because I think I know what's going on here. And so, Krishna explained to him how Brahma had apparently stolen the original calves and cowherd boys, and Krishna was covering the whole scene up by himself becoming each individual calf and cowherd boy with all the variegatedness of each individual. Why did Krishna bewilder even Balaram? And how could that happen? Each Ishwar Parama Krishna, Satchitananda Vigraha. Krishna is the supreme controller. So much so that even this plane of incarnation like Vyasadeva, even Balaram, Krishna's first expansion, if Krishna wants, they don't know something. When Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, there's nothing superior to me. Nothing means certainly not even personal Brahman, certainly not demigods, not even Narayana, not even Krishna's closest expansions. Krishna had a personal reason for not letting Balaram see into what was going on in terms of what Brahma had done. He wanted to spare Balaram from feeling separation from Balaram's cowardly friends like Sri Rama. He didn't want Balaram to go through it. Now, Krishna himself was always with those so-called missing cowardly boys in an expansion of his own. He was never actually separated from him. But it was a different situation in reference to Balaram. So Krishna didn't want him to feel the separation from his favorite cowherd boys. So Balaram was also covered. And then in the final fourth phase of Balaram's unbewilderment, he saw indeed each calf and each cowherd boy as for him and Narayana. He actually saw it. And in that way, Balaram's unbewilderment was complete. So this can happen to Balaram, which is Vikram Vyasadeva. Krishna wants that Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken. That's how important Srimad Bhagavatam is. When Narada comes upon Vyasadeva, what does he do? He smiles. Smiles are very important in the Shastra. When Arjuna asks Krishna at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Senyo Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti Stapaya Nishita, O infallible one, drive my chariot in between the two armies so I can see who's gathered there, ready to fight. And Krishna does that. And then he sees Arjuna becoming overwhelmed by material limitations, by Krishna's arrangement. Still, Krishna's smiling. Why? Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna's thinking, just see the power of my mind. Arjuna's right here on the same chariot as me. He's my dear friend, and he's still falling into Maya. Of course, it's why Krishna's arrangement, so that you would get a perfect example of what it's like to fall into Maya and how you talk when you're in Maya. Although Arjuna's Maya talk is the pinnacle of intelligence and character, still, what does Krishna say? Pragyalanam Shabashta, you're speaking big words, they sound learned, but you don't really know what you're talking about. So if that happens, if that's Krishna's response to Arjuna's excuses, what about our excuses? There's no way we can manufacture excuses that are as crazy as Arjuna's. Yet although Arjuna's excuses for not doing what Krishna wants were so erudite, still Krishna knows. You're speaking like someone who has no knowledge. You're speaking like someone inexperienced. So that was Krishna's smile as Arjuna was falling under the influence of bewilderment. And then his representative, Narayamuni, is smiling. Is Narayamuni getting some kind of satisfaction or joy to see that his disciples bewildered? No. Narayamuni is smiling because he, number one, knows the source of Vyasa's problem, and number two, he's actually inwardly satisfied with Vyasa. Narayamuni knows this is a whole scenario created just for Srimad Bhagavatam to be spoken. So he actually knows that Vyasa is not at fault. He sees the whole scene. So he's actually pleased with Vyasa. And he knows what the cure is to the situation. That is the job of a devotee who is giving instruction on behalf of the Parampara. You know what is the solution to all problems. Some may consider that it's very simplistic that in every situation you should be told, chant Hare Krishna, hear Srimad Bhagavatam. But isn't there something more than that? Of course, that's exactly what Narayamuni told Vyasadeva. His first statement was a classic diagnosis in the form of a question. Are you satisfied by identifying the body and mind as itself? Just like Krishna first said to Arjuna, you're speaking big words, but you don't know what you're talking about. Someone who actually has knowledge doesn't speak like this. Similarly, Narayamuni, as Krishna's representative, asked a loaded question. Are you satisfied by identifying with the body and mind as the self? In other words, your problem is due to improper application of the process of bhakti. You haven't glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead enough. Now, what would you do today? You had some sticky situation, some complex situation. Generally, when devotees get into complexity, they start to think, not generally, but sometimes, they start to think, oh, no one has been in this situation before. No one can, no, the other devotees can't really understand. Someone for advice, and along with whatever practical, situational, circumstantial counsel the person can give, which is very valuable and necessary. If you're talking to a devotee who has spiritual realization, along with that secondary, circumstantial, situational advice or pointers that the devotee may give, such a devotee will always say, what is the problem you're hearing in chanting? Now, in this crisis, is the chance to cling to the holy name with greater tenacity than ever before. And then what are you going to say? Oh, here we go again. Of course, you won't say that out loud. Because after all, we're devotees. We keep up the externals very well. But inwardly, you're thinking, why is it that in every situation we're always told just chant Hare Krishna better, with more attention, put more focus into my hearing and chanting? Well, that is the parampara. That is what Narayamuni told Vyasa. You haven't glorified Krishna enough. Now, it's not that Vyasa had totally neglected Krishna. But Marilyn is pointing out is you haven't given enough. And even though you've given a little, the great weight of what you said, of what you've given, is about economics, politics, this, that, and the other in the Mahabharata, or Brahman and Vedanta Sutra. In other words, Narayana Muni is saying, come on, come on, Bhavatam. That's what we're all waiting for. So don't get it in your mind that Vyasa was like, completely didn't speak anything about Krishna. After all, according to what he teaches there within Mahabharata. But Narayana Muni knew, if the people in the age of Kali are going to get any benefit at all, there has to be Srimad Bhagavatam, in which, as Sanatana Goswami explains, every syllable is saturated with Krishna prayer. Narayana Muni pointed out to Vyasadeva, all right, I've written the Mahabharata, all right, you've given Vedanta, but something more is required. And then you'll actually feel complete and you'll have done your mission. Upon reading closely the purports in this chapter, you'll see the 100% conviction of Srila Prabhupada that hearing and chanting solves social problems, solves political problems. He points out that when you see the strife, political and economic complications of the day, the real problem is not the economic or political issue in itself. This is important. What's actually important is to know that it's the polluted atmosphere of Kali Yuga that's causing the mess. Of course, you'll never find that out by from the traditional media. They hold an expert in getting you to just get embroiled in the complexities of an issue, such as the political situation, due to nationalism, ethnocentrism, the elections were rigged, the elections didn't have observers, inequality of wealth, 1%. What's the figure? 1% of the world's population controls 50% of the world's wealth. What are we going to do about that? Should we have higher taxes on the rich, or should we do that? No. And you just get sucked into all that. Especially because many people, they care. They have, ordinary compassion. Just like Arjuna was showing the meaning of Bhagavad Gita. This ever-increasing inequality of wealth is problematic. This social problem, that social problem. There's a good section of society that really is concerned about others, the golden rule. Do you want to others as you have done to you? How do others feel? How would you feel if you were in that situation? There are many people like that. The problem is, though, they can't solve these problems with material methods. And that's what you'll understand 100% by studying this chapter. It'll purify you of any attachment for material solutions. And that is very important. So just remember, the problem is not the situation itself with all its intricacies. The problem is the polluted atmosphere, the age of Kali, which makes intricate problems appear here and there and everywhere. So if you're actually going to solve the problem, you have to solve Kali Yuga. How do you do that? So Narayana Muni is advocating Ananta Prasaram Sapta Bhakti Yoga Adoption. What the mass of people don't know is that the process of bhakti, which connects the forgotten soul to Krishna, of course the connection is never lost. It seems that way. I was just reading yesterday Jill Collins' explanation that it seems that Jijima has fallen. It seems that way. So, it seems we're disconnected from Krishna. The example given in the third canto of Bhagavatam. There's a naughty student in class, and the teacher wants to shake the kid up. So the teacher says, if you don't stop misbehaving in my classroom, I'm going to cut off your head and put it at the front of the room so you can see. That'll shake you up. Obviously, if your head's cut off, how are you going to see? Anyway, so that's what the illusory energy, the external energy, Krishna does. It makes you think you're separate from Krishna and makes you think that Krishna is not existent or far away, and here is the nice, big, fat, juicy external energy all waiting for you to explain, control, and enjoy. So this perception that you're separate from Krishna is managed by the illusory energy. Now everybody points out, this is the root of the problem, and it can be cured by the connecting process of bhakti, which has its foundation hearing about Krishna, glorifying Krishna. So in that way, both in terms of the individual and society, Narayana is presenting the solution. So if you want to feel relieved of carrying the burden of thinking there are material solutions, you can read this chapter and see how patiently Srila Prabhupada endeavors to make sure that you get the point. Another angle he pursues is that what makes you think that you are sanctioned to solve material problems? What do you mean? We're intelligent human beings. Through our democratic systems, through our economic knowledge, through our engineering knowledge, medical knowledge, we can solve problems. What do you mean, am I sanctioned? Kind of primitive religious stuff. You can imagine saying that in New Zealand, some politician or whatever. You're not sanctioned to solve these problems. Wait, what are you talking about? Some kind of Hindu folklore taboos? So just think, if you're not the controller, then how can you think you are sanctioned to solve problems? Your sanction has to be granted by the Supreme Ishwar. And the actual sanction to solve problems means you're following the process that Narayana Muni is given. That's the sanctioned way to solve problems. But why do you think that you're sanctioned to come up with material solutions to material problems? And the proof that you're not sanctioned is that your so-called solutions are worse than the problem. As Prahlad Maharaj pointed out. So again, if you want to be relieved of the unnecessary burden of having expectations of material solutions for individual problems and social problems, you can study this dialogue between Narayana Muni and Vyasa. Srila Prabhupada didn't know, he said, whether he would be on the planet long enough to finish the Bhagavatam, so he said he put everything, especially, into the first canto. So therefore you'll see such lengthy commentation. Just like in Chaita, attending Chennai Tamil to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Wrote at the beginning of Madhya Leela, I don't know if I'm going to be around to finish. So therefore, I'm giving a synopsis in the first chapter of Madhya Leela. I'm giving a synopsis in case I don't make it to the Anshul Leela. And Srila Prabhupada gave us Krishna book, Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in case he thought he didn't finish the 10th canto. When he was on his departure bed and devotees were pleading, because Prabhupada said that Krishna had given him a choice whether to stay or go. So of course the devotees were pleading, please stay, and they were coming up with reasons why Srila Prabhupada should stay. And they said, you haven't finished the Bhagavatam. That's your great mission. You haven't finished it yet. You're only up to the 13th chapter of the 10th canto. And Prabhupada replied, what I did is enough. So the Krishna book is there. What are Srila Prabhupada's instructions for reading Krishna book? When devotees would pepper him with questions about how is it that Ubrasena had so many bodyguards living in Dwarka or things like that. The Prabhupada said, Krishna book means read and enjoy. Got something against that? Most of you all ex-unistic enjoyers. So now the founder tried to give you something to read and enjoy. And you want to tear it apart, you know? Getting into all the inconceivable details. You have your life, read it and enjoy it. But no one of us cheated. So you don't even have to enjoy it. Someone comes before you with some pizza for the eye and says, eat it and enjoy it. You say, well, when the olives come from, how long was the bottle of olives left open before the cook actually put them on the pizza? Now, here, this is an offering to Krishna. Now you take, you enjoy what Krishna has enjoyed. Enjoy his goodness. No worries, Prabhu. Krishna, what we did enjoy? You're reading not simply for information, you're reading for association with Srila Prabhupada, with Krishna's devotees. And you're tasting various flavors. And those flavors are not tasted with material intelligence and material senses. So you keep reading Bhagavad Gita and Krishna book over and over again, more and more, you'll realize that. You'll start to savor the flavors.